Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. That is 3GT, your favorite podcast, where myself, Kyle Borg, Elder Scott Hunt, and professor and president of the Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary, Barry York, sit around and theologize, kind of in the same way you would expect after a well-served meal, sitting back and just talking about topics of interest. We do thank you for our committed listeners, and if this is the first time you're tuning in with us, we do give a special welcome to you. Well, today's topic is a topic that I hope is practical and useful, and it is the topic of developing and encouraging ruling elders. So I think this will be an especially helpful topic. I'm especially glad to have Scott as one of our regular co-hosts, who is a ruling elder at his congregation in Marion, Indiana. And so I think Scott will likely be able to bring a perspective to this that even Barry and I, who are not ruling elders but teaching elders, will be very, very valuable. So before...
No, to be fair, yes.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. You're right. Barry is a ruling elder. I'm the odd man out. So. Barry is also a ruling elder at College Hill in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. And so while I value Scott's comments, I trust that Barry's will not be super. So.
I just want you to encourage me, Kyle.
Barry, my whole life is spent encouraging you. So. But before we jump into the idea of developing and then encouraging ruling elders, could you guys just, so we're all on the same page, in case our listeners are not familiar with that vocabulary, what do we mean by ruling elder? And where in Scripture might we go to get an understanding of that?
Well, I'll take the first part of that question. A ruling elder is he's a man that's been elected by the congregation based upon, I think, the evidence of his life, doctrinal integrity that he has. He's elected to lead the congregation. He's not a preacher. He's not, seminarily trained, but he's a man that the congregation sees that the Lord has raised up to lead the congregation and to rule over them. That's one way to look at it.
Yes, and Presbyterianism, we often make the distinction between teaching elders, which are ministers and pastors, and ruling elders who serve a local congregation. We see in the book of Acts that after Paul went through and planted different churches, that he went back and visited them. In Acts 14:23, it says that he went back and appointed elders, which were men in each of the congregations. And we find in his writings, particularly in 1 Timothy and Titus, he lists the qualifications for an elder. And so in the Reformed Presbyterian Church, we believe that the teaching and ruling elders are both of the same office, but we make the distinction between the two. And so a teaching elder would be licensed and examined by a presbytery, whereas a ruling elder, he's more of a local figure where he is raised up within a congregation and voted on by the congregation and ordained within that particular congregation.
Thanks, that's helpful. And so just to emphasize that, I like the way you both have given us a perspective on that, but a ruling elder is an elder, and so we do believe that there are two continuing offices in the New Testament, that of elder and deacon. But even within the eldership, Barry, as you said, there does seem to be a distinction. For instance, the Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy 5:17, he writes there, "Let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching." So there does seem to be, even within the eldership, a distinction that there are some who, in particular, labor in the preaching and the teaching, whereas all elders rule. And Scott, as you said, they lead the church. And so a ruling elder is not, as Scott said, somebody who has had to go to seminary in order to be a ruling elder. They've not been examined at a presbytery level. They are elders, and they are in charge of helping to lead and shepherd the flock of Jesus Christ as under shepherds. And as Presbyterians, we would also say on an equal footing with a pastor. That's what we call the parity of the eldership. Pastor does not have more weight or more say in the ruling of the church. Every elder is equal when we come to the table and take up the shepherding matters of the church. So just so everybody is clear on that. So let's talk about, I want to break this episode into two parts. And the first is talking about developing ruling elders. And then secondly, we'll get into how can we encourage our ruling elders more. But let's look at this idea of developing ruling elders. How do you practically begin to do that? What does it look like to begin developing men for the office of ruling elder? What do you look for? What kind of training? Let's just open the door pretty wide on that question.
I think it's often easy to think, well, if we're going to develop ruling elders, we just need to have a class on ruling elders and sit down and teach the guys in the church what an elder does, and then at the end of the class, find the right guys to vote for. But I think the question's deeper than that. I'm not speaking against having classes. I think they can be very helpful. But I think that in the life and ministry of a congregation, the men who are leaders, that should begin to emerge in the practical outworking of the ministry. I was a church planter, and one of the things about church planting is that you start a work without ruling elders, and we had borrowed leadership for a time. In other words, other pastors and elders came to the place where I was church planting and helped me shepherd the church for the first couple of years until we saw ruling elders raised up. But during that time, one of the things I remembered is just as we did ministry, as we evangelized, as we did Bible studies, as we had worship, I would take certain men and ask them to do things such as praying or leading a study or going with me to visit someone in the hospital. And it's really that with him principle, just taking men with you, you really begin to see their gifts, their abilities, whether they're leaders or not. And it's through that type of practical ministry process that I really saw the men that God was raising up for our own local elders. So that would be one way, at least one way in which I think they're developed is by a minister sharing the ministry with men in the congregation and see how they handle that responsibility.
And that's what I was getting at when I said that the congregation examines the life of the ruling elder. You can see in a congregation, it's really fascinating. You can see the men who the Lord is raising up for different offices, or you know, one to be a deacon, but the Lord really works in the lives of these men. And I've seen it. It's kind of a natural growth of their walk with the Lord. It's not something they're going to learn from a class. It's something they do in their life. And I think that's the first way that you develop them is you show them what a ruling elder is supposed to look like, what they do by example. Then you watch to see who emulates that and who is starting to do that, and you encourage them in that work. So in that way, it's a much more practical education than it is a classroom education.
So before we get into maybe, I like where you're both going with that, but before we get to the question of maybe what kinds of things do you look for then in men that you want to develop as elders, let's pause for a second. I want to ask a question, and I'm actually very interested in hearing what our responses are going to be. Do you think every man in the congregation should, in one sense, be in the process of being developed into a ruling elder?
I'll say it, no. I'll be honest with you. There are some men whose gifts do not lie in that direction. Now, that doesn't mean we don't encourage them to study the word, to teach a class. But there are some men that I have seen in the congregation who serve better in a role of a deacon, an encourager in the congregation, but just because you're a ruling elder material. I don't want to sound, you know, uppity about that, but I think that's the truth of the matter.
I would agree with Scott. I think that it's a calling that God raises up men within a church that are going to be its leaders, and that wouldn't be every man. Now, having said that, I do believe that one of the purposes of the ruling elder is to be a model of godliness, a model of faithfulness. And so every man in the congregation should be trying to be like a ruling elder in one sense, as far, in so far as the ruling elder is following Christ. So there's a development in each man. He should have the types of qualities that we see in elders, but that doesn't mean every man should potentially be considered an elder.
Yeah, I appreciate both of those answers. I ask that because when I first became a Presbyterian, and I won't name names, but I was in a similar-minded denomination, but the congregation we were in, the pastor very much thought that every man in the congregation should basically be under perpetual development towards the eldership. And not just, Barry, as you've said, you know, seeking to model your life after, but like, you all need to be, have an eye to the eldership. All of you should be aspiring to this office, and we're going to develop you so that you can. And in the years since then, I think that's, well, I don't like that. You know, I think we need to be sure that men in our congregations know that there is a plethora of ways to serve. And we can tend to put the eldership on the top of the ladder. And I grant that the elders are the leaders of the congregation. They are the leadership of the church. They have a very, very important role. In fact, so important as Presbyterians, we don't really believe a church exists without the eldership. You've got to have elders. But we can so exalt it as though, you know, there's not other avenues of service where men may be extremely useful in the church. And I think we need to be very sensitive to that. And recognizing, Scott, as you said, look, the simple fact is not every man is equipped and gifted to be a ruling elder. And that's okay. That's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we are one body with many parts. And it just reminds us all the time our mutual dependence on one another. Barry, were you going to interrupt me?
No, I was being very... Because that's the quality of an elder. You got to be patient.
I'm sitting at your feet. I am learning from you right now. No, so
I was thinking, though, that when I was in the PCUSA church, I know that not only did they have women elders, but they also were constantly re-electing elders. They only served short terms, and then they would put in new people, and it really gave the idea that pretty soon everybody in the congregation is going to have a turn being an elder. And I think that's part of the demise of the Presbyterian church, is that they've not protected the office of elder, which is the rich tradition of true Presbyterianism.
That's very helpful. So moving on from that, you guys have said as the church looks, as pastors look, as other ruling elders look to develop ruling elders, one of the key things is to begin to be a model to them, to bring them along on ministry experience. Beyond that, and more specifically, what kind of things do you look for in a man? What kind of things do you look for that kind of confirm in your own mind, I think this man might be elder material?
Well, you certainly want to look at his family if he's married. Of course, Paul says that one of the qualifications is that he's the husband of one wife and that he manages his own household, that his children are living faithfully. So I think that you want to look into his house, and I think that's one of the places that we're to be encouraging. Again, all the men in the church, but particularly those who want to be elders. I know that there's been some men that seem to have a lot of good qualities, but at the particular time we were looking at them for an elder, they weren't quite, didn't quite have their home in order. There were some issues going on, and so they were encouraged to take some time and work on those things and then come up for consideration at a later time. So I think that's a really important place to look. Because if you can't manage your own house, then how are you going to manage, How are you going to keep watch over the house of God, as Paul says?
Right. And I also think you look to see how they, how involved they are in the peripherals of the church. And what I mean by that is, are they there on the at the Wednesday night Bible study? Are they there at the work day? Are they showing up to the men's prayer breakfast? Are they going and visiting people who aren't there? So you look for those types of ministering hearts. And from that, you know, look at their family, look at their hearts. Are they volunteering or willing to step up and do hard things, pray during prayer times? Those kind of the things that you look for to see if somebody is developing into a ruling elder, at least from my perspective, that's what you're looking at.
I agree. You want to see them being an elder before you elect them to that office, in a sense that they're functioning in many ways, that they're caring for the people of God. One other, I think Scott just raised a lot of good places to look. One other place I would say is the evening service. If they're not coming to the evening service and not showing devotion to that, I know that's in the one session that was has been an issue, whether we could really regard a man or not.
Which, I love the evening service. What Sinclair Ferguson always said, you can judge a congregation's love for the word by how many people show up in evening worship. But, you know, I think that's very practically, that's important, because I've been in churches where some of the ruling elders will come in AM worship, not PM. They are only present at 50% of the worship services in a given year. And that to me seems problematic. What else do you look for as far as character, as far as intellect? What are some things you look for that you gauge in those areas?
They definitely need to know the doctrines of the church, be conversant in them, and be willing to vow to uphold them, that they're really their convictions. They're not just coming to the church, but would have a lot of exceptions to the doctrines of the denomination that they're serving. So I think that would be important for an elder, and something that shouldn't be too difficult to ascertain. So that would be certainly one important area to look at, is their commitment to the doctrines of the church.
Their willingness to learn the doctrine. Ruling elders are not trained at a seminary. We are trained, I guess, in the life of hard knocks. And so a ruling elder needs to, do you like that, Kyle?
Yeah, that was good. It's a hard knock life.
I know.
Is that your theme song? Is that your entrance song when you walk into the sanctuary on a Sunday?
Yes. That's the entrance song. Before the call of worship. After the call of worship, we're done with that. But before then, I don't even know where I was going with that, Kyle. I'm so sorry.
Well, no, I think you were helpful there, right? Seminary is not the field really in which a ruling elder grows.
And so there has to be a commitment to self-learning, being able to learn from other men. It is a different, we have an equal office, that's what our denomination says, but it is a different function. And we learn differently, and we are trained differently. But I think a ruling elder has to be willing to learn from the pastor, to learn from books. We're not going to be as theologically astute as a teaching elder, but we need to be able to know where to go and how to find it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very helpful. If I can throw in a couple of suggestions too, you know, when I think about ruling elder development, I do want a man who understands the Christian faith and the doctrines of the church. You know, the Apostle Paul says of deacons, they are to hold the mystery of the faith with a good conscience. How much more so the elders, who are really in charge of protecting the flock against false teaching, who really guard the pulpit to make sure that, you know, I'm not saying micromanage the pulpit, but to guard it, to make sure that what is being preached is faithful to the Bible. I do think that one of the weaknesses in Reformed churches is we often think if a man's really good at systematic theology or whatever, yeah, let's make him a ruling elder. And what I appreciate about what you guys have been saying is the practical experience that is needed. You know, when I think about ruling elder development, I want a man who knows what it is to sit beside the bedside of someone who is dying and knows how in that moment to bring the truth of God to bear, knows in that moment how to pray for that individual and for that family. I want men who know how to very carefully walk through issues, right? You can have a rote memorization of all the systematic theology you want, but when members of your church come to you with cases of conscience, I want men of wisdom who are able to say, here's how the scriptures apply to this situation. I want men who are extremely sensitive, sensitive, and I mean that by pastorally. They know what it is to empathize. They know what it is to sympathize with people. They know what it is to take others' burdens to themselves, because so much of the pastoral ministry and leading and shepherding the church, that's exactly what you're doing on a day-by-day basis. You know, rarely are we taking a Luther stand, here I stand, I can do no other. You know, it's more often ministering to the very real and very difficult needs in a congregation. I think it's so important for men who are being developed to show that they are able to do that, because you really, any shepherd needs to do that, or you really hurt the flock. So
I think
those are helpful.
Kyle, if I might just add, I think that's why Paul tells us that elders can't be men who are, you know, lovers of money or drunkards or pugnacious, because they aren't sensitive, like you're saying. They're too taken up with causes and aren't really caring for the people of God. So I think that's really important. And if I could just add one other thing, I think it's so important for the guy to have a, as it says in the qualifications, a good reputation in his community. I mentioned I'm a ruling elder at college. I don't really feel like a ruling elder. I'm just serving in that capacity. I really look at the other men at the table as the true ruling elders there. Because
I thought you were going to say you look at yourself as the bishop of the ruling elders.
No, I don't.
You're more humble than I could ever imagine.
I feel like I'm dressing up like a ruling elder, but I'm not really one, because I don't know, that there's just something about the men who are working in their communities who represent the people of God in a more direct way than what I feel like I do. And so that to me is really important. It's always been important to me that the elders are men of the community. They have a good reputation in the community. People respect them not only in the church, but also in their vocation or neighborhoods and that type of thing. So I think that's really important for an elder.
And I've often thought with that, Barry, you know, it's always neat for me when I gather with my session, because on my session, we have a retired school teacher. We have a guy who was a trim carpenter. We have an ambulance driver, or he used to be an ambulance driver. We have a college professor. Here are men from all kinds of different callings in life. Mm-hmm. And yet they have been called to be under shepherds in the Church of Jesus Christ. And I always just kind of marvel at that. So I would love to have a lawyer on my session at some point, Scott. So.
No, you wouldn't.
You're right.
You wouldn't.
Well, let's talk. We've got a few minutes left here. You've given a good picture on maybe developing what it looks like to begin cultivating that. But what about encouraging? Let's open up. How can a pastor encourage his ruling elders? But more than that, and I think this is so important, how can a congregation encourage their ruling elders?
I'll speak as a pastor first. I think too often I hear pastors wanting that question to go the other way around, that they're looking for their ruling elders to encourage them, and hopefully ruling elders will. But I do think a pastor's job should be to come alongside and encourage his elders. One of the great ways to do that is to get to know the men in their homes and in their workplaces if possible. I always encourage the men I'm training at RPTS to really make it a goal their first year to get to know their ruling elders. Just getting to know them will encourage them. And so pastors should know what their ruling elders do, have a sense of their jobs, have a sense of the responsibilities they carry, visit them if they can. In their workplaces, you'll just get to see your elders in a whole different light. And it gives you it'll give you a deeper appreciation for all that they do, because they're serving voluntarily the church. And, you know, pastors are usually getting paid to do so. So we should really value highly our ruling elders and appreciate their life outside the session meetings.
And I think one of the best ways to encourage ruling elder, one of the ways I've been encouraged most is people just coming up and we're praying for you, ruling elders. Sometimes, you know, people know, and I'm not trying to diminish the difficult work it is to be a pastor, to be a teaching elder, because you're in the limelight a lot more. You're preparing sermons. You're the ones that usually get the call, you know, in the middle of the night with an emergency. And so it's typically people pray for the pastors. You know, you hear that, pray for your pastors. But it's very encouraging to me to know that my congregation is praying for me and asking, what can we do? How can we help? What can we do better? We're praying for you. So those are things that are priceless to a ruling elder, to know that the congregation is there supporting them too.
And I think with that, if I can interject another idea, I think having both a pastor and a congregation make use of their ruling elders. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy as a pastor, you know, not saying that ruling elders don't share the burden, but in many ways, a pastor spends his life 24/7 thinking about the church and what's going to go on. And you know, ruling elders don't have that luxury in many ways. And it's easy for pastors then to want to ramrod their will through. But pastors should be encouraged when you're meeting with your elders, I want your input. You know, we are all called to lead the church together. This is not the pastor leading the church. So one of the practices that I've tried to do is on every important decision, I make sure that we go around the table and I ask every one of my elders, what do you think about this issue? What do you think about our solution? But I also think for congregants to do that as well. Make use of your ruling elders. They love you. They're your shepherds. It will take a bit of a load off your pastor's shoulders as well, so it's a little slightly self-serving. But really, elders, use your ruling elders. They are men whom the congregation has called to the office of shepherd, and let them shepherd you. When you're going through trials, when you're going through afflictions, when you've got temptations, when you've got questions, use your ruling elders. That's what they're there for. And I think that would be a tremendous encouragement to ruling elders. But maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right, Kyle. I think that it's easy for a ruling elder not to feel like they're a part of the decisions or not to feel like the congregation really needs them. But I could tell you to a man that I've met as ruling elders, they're all willing and ready to help at any given moment. I've seen ruling elders, you know, get out of bed in the middle of the night to help with situations, to counsel in difficult situations. I've seen teaching elders do the same, but they're there. And, you know, it's kind of like is it the Stradivarius violin? You know, it's there to be played. It's not there to be looked at. Its beauty is in its being played, not in being looked at. You didn't like that? Oh, come on. I thought that was a good
country bumpkin pastor. What is
that? It's like a good banjo. You know, you can't have a banjo just sit there. You have to play it.
You know, the mandolin. The mandolin exists to be played.
That's
right. Well, I was at Synod last week, and just to give a little praise to our real ruling elder on this program, I was sitting across from a pastor in Ohio, and they're without their own ruling elders now. And I know our buddy Scott here has been serving as a provisional elder, driving over at least once a month over to this congregation a few hours away and offering support as an elder to that congregation. And he was just expressing how much he appreciated Scott's ministry service, love for their church. And so elders can do work beyond their own congregations as well. I've seen a lot of elders helping in church planting situations, or like Scott as a provisional elder for a struggling church, or serving on a commission in a presbytery to bring their wisdom to a need or an issue. So I think that's another way ruling elders can be both developed and encouraged.
I would agree. And I think
you agree with how great an elder you are? Is that what you're agreeing to?
No. I was agreeing to developing. No.
You're right. I'm something special.
I just strained my arm patting myself on the back.
I know.
I would agree. I would agree with you that being on commissions, serving on committees, doing those kind of things for a ruling elder are vitally important to get them plugged in with the broader church. It's easy for a ruling elder to be so congregationally focused that they forget about the broader church. I've served on, I think, a commission, visitation committee, two visitation committees. I'm a provisional elder, and it has been nothing but beneficial for me to be able to serve in that way and to learn and get to know the broader church in a deeper way. And so I'm thankful for those opportunities. And I think teaching elders, you need to encourage your ruling elders, especially your young ruling elders, to get involved in that way. I think Barry may have dropped my name once or twice as a young elder, as somebody that should be called for a commission or a committee, but I'm not sure about that, but I have my suspicions.
I plead the fifth.
Man, if somebody dropped my name for a committee or a commission, they would no longer be my friend. Well, I think that's a helpful discussion, and I think this is a good place to wrap it up. Again, I want to thank you for tuning in to this episode of Three Guys Theologizing. Go online and visit us at 3gt.xyz. Head over to iTunes to subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a review. We'd love to hear from our listeners. Until next time, thanks for tuning in.